Boker Tov, Rebbe, and California, Harnof and Barnea's neighborhood.
Boker Tov, world. Today's daf from Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Mem Zayin, and we're right in the middle of the sugya, trying to figure out whether the inyan of a hesped is the yikra of the shikhvi. So is it in order to give kovet to the nifter, or is it essentially the kovet of the chai, so the kovet of the family? And we spoke about the various nafkaminas that would make la halacha. Tashma, so today we want to take a look at a medrash about the pasuk of nivzeh beinav nimas miyagur be'alecha. And one of them is someone who is nivzeh beinav nimas. So it's a person who doesn't consider himself to be choshev in his own eyes, and he has no regard for his own kavod. So who is this referring to? Zech Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. What was there about Chizkiyo that shows that he was nivze beinav nimas, and that therefore he's roi to miyogur be'ohalecha? He was girer atzmot aviv amitah shel chavalim. So when Ochaz, his father, died, instead of giving him a royal funeral as benefits a melech, he dragged the atzama, meaning he dragged the body of his father on a very low class kind of rope
Thank you.
bed, and dragged him through the streets to bury him because of all of the avodah zarah that he had done, and he wanted to be mechaper publicly, that people should see that there's no kovet that's given for such a king. And because of that, he apparently was nivze in his own enough. But I mean, how does that make sense? If it's meant for the shichve, if it's meant, please, Gavi, I think you are needing muting, and also Ori has not been responding at all to hold by holding up her own boots, so I don't know what's happening in your family. Okay, so if the kovod is meant to be given to the niftar, so then I don't understand. Then mishum of the living, so then I don't understand my taima. So then, why did he do what it is that he did? I mean, it's basically nothing to do with the dead individual. It has to do with the live individuals who were reflected on him. Yes, that's true, but still, maybe the main point over here was that he wanted his father to have kapara. So it's true that there was a price to be paid in terms of the kovod of the am as a whole, that would have had a royal funeral that was more choshev and something that was suitable for an am. But the question was that he, as his son, felt more the importance of doing something that would be a kapora for his father, and at the same time would serve as a chinuch for Klal Yisrael about how to be knowing. I didn't understand, but what right would he have to dishonor Klal Yisrael in order to get a kapora for his father? Well, that still doesn't answer the question. Yes, because basically, Klal Yisrael is happy in order for that to happen. Yisrael gufayon, they were willing to have their king, Chizkiyahu, to be able to get what it is that he wanted so much to do for his own father. They were necha to be meichel on their cover. Tashma, Amar lehem, we know that Reb Yehuda Hanasi gave a lot of instructions before he died as to how it was that things should be handled after his death. Among those instructions were the way that the funeral for himself was to be carried out. So one of the things that he said was, Al tispeduni ba'ayarot, while I was being taken from Tzipori down to Beit She'arim, which is, as we know, where Rebbe was buried, and Rebbe was living at Tzipori. So there's many small villages along the road. Don't stop in those villages for Hespedim. Only go through the larger cities. Now, why is that? If the entire idea of a Hesped is to give cover to the people that are here, there at the Hesped, so my nafkalemina, what difference does it make to Rebbe where the Hesped is? I mean, if you're telling me that it's supposed to be the covet of the maze, so obviously Rebbe would have a right to say, listen, that's not a covet for me to be in a small town when there's only a few hundred people at the Hesped. But if every place there's a Hesped, it's a covet for the living, why would Rebbe not want the living to have that? Because he held, Kasavalis Yakrube Yisrael Tvei. There will be more covet for the living if there's enormous grounds at the Hesped. Tashma, all right, how about like this? Our Mishnah, and here's what we were leading up to the whole time. In the Mishnah, it says that Helino Lichvodo, so if they didn't bury the mace, not because they were lazy, but because they wanted to give him more covet. For instance, the Mishnah says, Lavilo Aron Vatachrichin. So we want to be able to prepare for him a proper casket and so on. So then, Eno Over Alav. Now it says, Lichvodo. I mean, that means for the honor of the mace, right? So apparently, the things that we do at a funeral are not for the honor of the living, it's for the honor of the actual deceased. No, actually, what the Mishnah means is the kavod of the family. That's what it means. It's the kavod shel chai. So it's saying is that in the kavod shel chai is the way that we deal with the family's deceased member. So whenever we talk about lichvodo, ultimately, the reference might be for the covet of the living and not specifically for the covet of the mace, even though we phrase it that way. But then again, I have the same question. Why would we dishonor the mate and leave him overnight and be over, you would think, on lotalin nivlato, because of the honor of the living? If you're telling me that it doesn't give any honor to the mate, so then how do you address the fact that the Torah said, Lo talini v'lato al ha'etz? Yes, of course it makes sense, because the point may be that Ki Yomar Achmona Lo talini v'lato al ha'etz, that pasuk means don't leave an unburied mate in the same fashion as having left his body hanging on the tree. Now, I mean, that's Dumya de Toloi. Hanging a body on a tree, that is positively bizayon, right? Deed be bizayon. It's very degrading to the mate to have him hanging on a pole. Mashenken here, it's not degrading. So since given the let be bizayon is nothing specifically degrading, which is not being megayim the mitzvah. So that we could say that is kedai to do, because the Torah didn't talk about a case where we're going to leave someone there in order to be able to give covet through the proper burial. So therefore, the Isser was never said under those circumstances. Okay, gosh, how about this? How about this Braita? The Braita says, Elinu lichvodo, suppose he was left overnight in order to honor him. What does honor him mean? Lishamei alavayarod, to get together people from the same neighboring area, to come to his levaya, or lavilo mekonanot, want to bring the, in those days they had professional mekonanot, women that would utilize, you know, and cry over the niftar, or the case in the Mishnah, lavilo aron v'takrichin, eino overalav. Now listen to what it says in the Braita. How are you going to get away with this? It says, Shekol ha'oseh eino ela lechvodo shel meit. It says beferish. Whatever is being done in honor of the mate. Now that's very clearly not in honor of the chai. It's taking for granted that the whole point is the honor of the mate. But I explained to you a moment ago, did I not, that when I use that terminology, it could mean that the kvodo shel meit, the whole point of it is that that is the honor of the chai, and memela, it's our nifter, and the kvodo shel our nifter is our covet. So essentially what it's saying is, maybe, I mean, I'm just saying, you can't bring a raya from here, says the Gemara. Anything that is done that is a honor for the families, the family feels that that is their honor and that bait. Ein bo bizayon lemeit. That's what the Mishnah Bright is essentially saying, just like I explained to you in the Mishnah. Okay, I have one very clear proof. Tashma. Rebbe Natan omer, Siman yafe lamed shenifraim mimenu liachar mita. It's a very good sign if after an individual dies that he is able to get a kapara by something being a lack of covet in the way that he was worried for buried. For instance, a mate where they never were able to give a hesped. Maybe the hesped was interrupted by bad weather. Or he wasn't buried. Or maybe an animal attacked the funeral procession, dragged the body out, and was gorarto. Or maybe it was pouring while they were carrying him to the kfura. So there was rain that was pouring down on him. You know, he was alfen al mitato. All of this is something of a bizayon, and that's a good sign. Zeh simin yofel ha'meit, because it shows that he's getting a kapora, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to be able to come to Gan Eden without any kind of averus. So shma mina yikra d'shachrius. Obviously, I mean, the family is not happy about that, right? But nonetheless, it says that it's considered to be a good sign. So if that's the case, it's a question of the impact on him, and not the impact on the family. Because if you're telling me that having it rain on his body is a violation of the honor of the Chaim, how is that the kapara for him? The whole point over here, clearly, is that we're focused on what affects him, and it's his personal kapara. This seems to be a clear raya at shma mina yikara d'shachveu. Shma mina. Yes, indeed, it is an excellent raya. So we finally get to what is intuitively what everybody felt all along, that when it says kvod ha'shel meit, it means kvod ha'shel meit. There's a beautiful insight here that Rav Dessler brings. Okay, I think he brought in the name of his Rebbe, of the incredible chasodim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the fact that it's raining on this guy's body at the funeral, that is enough of a kapora that it should make a difference in Gan Eden. You understand what that implies? It's like the smallest thing that is, okay, big deal, you know, so it's raining. I mean, the Ramban writes about even a single avera that a person does in reality to be made against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of the Yisurim of Eov, his entire life, wouldn't be enough to be mechaper for. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being mechaper on him by this meaningless kind of thing, and that's enough to get him a kapora. That's astounding. There's another beautiful point that he makes out of this sugya, which is also interesting, because remember we had this story of the crazy switching of the bodies, right? Remember the Moches and the Talmud Chacham? They took the body of the Moches and they gave it great honor. And why, says the Gemara, was he zeichet to that? Because once he had made this big feast in honor of some Goyish government official who never showed up, and he gave it to the Aniyim. The point, however, is that in the end, when they were making this funeral, and they said all the Aspedim at the funeral, did they mention the Moches? Or they said, and our great leader, Talmud Chacham X, it doesn't say the name, but Talmud Chacham Ploni, who has meant so much to our community. So, like, what difference does it make to the Moches? If nobody mentioned the Moches, they didn't say, oh, yes, they talked about the Talmud Chacham. So in the end, he didn't get any covet. So what was the point? Beautiful question. The answer is astonishing. This proves that an individual who is so hung up on the imaginary realities, the virtual realities of Olam Hazeh, is unable to get away from it, even after his death. So in the same way, people will take honor, even though they know, I don't really deserve this honor. You know, so a guy happened to be rich. He gave so much money to build such a building. And they make a big feast, a great pillar of our community. The guy who's has been behind all of the learning and education. Yes, yes, that's me, that's me. And the same thing is true in Olam Haba. So they're talking about this other person, but so what? They think it's me. That's good enough for me. Frightening situation, no? Anyway, so Shmamina, we just came out with a proof 100% that the Hesped is meant as the covet of the meat. Okay, then the Mishnah says, when it came to the Kfura, they did not take the body of someone who was killed in Beis Din to bury in his own family's plot. There was a special Beit HaKfaris, two special Beit HaKfaris. One of them was for the Nisrafim and the Niskalim, and one of them was for those who were Chayev Saif or who were Nechenokim. Now, why is this? Why can't we just let him be buried in the kever of his family? We do not allow a Rasha to ever be buried next to a Tzaddik. How do we know this? The Omer of Achabar Chanina Minayin Sheinkovrim Rasha Yitzel Tzaddik. What's the marker for this? Sheneimar, Vayhi Heim Kovrim Ish, Vinei Ra'u Et HaGedud. So what happened over here? They were burying this person. Now it turns out that this person actually was the one who had caused Ido to be killed. He was the one that had pretended that he was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell him that Hashem changed his mind and that Ido is supposed to actually eat. And instead of being told, as he was told from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he wasn't supposed to go away without anything. Anyway, so they were taking him to be buried, and they were attacked right at that moment at the funeral. And it happened that they were at the point that they were attacked. They threw down his body, and it rolled into the grave of Elisha. Yashlichu et ha'ish bekever Elisha. They threw him directly in, but the body ended up in that cave next to Elisha. The moment that the dead body touched the body of Elisha, he came back to life and he stood up. Well, why would such a miracle happen? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want this Rasha to be buried next to a tzaddik. Amalei Rav Papa, well, wait a minute. I mean, this is a special situation. Remember that Elisha, before Elio was Eilu L'Rakia, Elisha had asked for Yeh pi shnayim berucha kohala. He asked Eliyahu, and Eliyahu told him he was granting that if he was zeicha to see Eliyahu going up to the Shamayim, that I want to have double your power, double your ruach. And that was granted to him. Now, if that's the case, if Eliyahu was mechayim meisim, one mace, then Elisha would actually have to be mechaye two meisim. And maybe that is exactly why this person stood up, because after all, Elisha, we know that he was mechaye the ben Hashunamit, but where was the other mace of Tchiyat HaMetim that would have expressed a pishnayim beruchacha? So maybe that was the only reason that this body came to life, because there was a bracha from Eliyahu that he should be zeicha to be mechaye emes. Omar lei. And so they told Rav Papa, Yachi, you think that that could be the reason? Then remember what it says in the Braita. It says, Vayamod araglav. That means the body stood up, walked away 3 feet, and died instantly. So he never made it home. I mean, you could just see the audience booing, you know. This is a Tchiyat HaMetim. This is nothing. So that wouldn't be a kiyum of Tchiyat HaMetim. So it says, hey, wait a minute. That's true. But then, if that's the case, where did Elisha actually do a second Tchiyat HaMetim to be mekayim the brocha of Eliyahu? Vayina pishnayim hecha mashkacha sladeachi, where? Omale Rabbi Yochanan. Well, remember that Elisha healed Naaman from his sarat. And we know that sarat is considered to be the equivalent of death. Because after all, Aaron says, al na tehi kemeit, Miriam's should not be like a dead body, because she had tzaraats. Therefore, that itself was the equivalent of Tchiyat HaMetim. And continuing on, Kishem she'in kovrim rashai tzal tzadik, just like we proved now, that we do not bury a rasha next to a tzadik, kach in kovrim rasha chamur, etzor rasha kal. It's also a concept of relative tzadik. So there's very bad Rishayim, and there's lesser Rishayim. And because of that, we had the two separate Batei Kvoros. One, which were the Rishayim Chamurim, that were Chayav Skila, or were Chayav Srefa, and others for the Rishayim that were not as Chamur. They were only Chayav Sayef or Chenek. I don't understand. So then why don't we have four? I mean, who are you to determine that we should only split it into two sets? Why should we put, I mean, although it's true we have a machlokas in each of those cases, which one is more chomer, but whatever, according to every shita, we should have each separate chiyav misa into a separate bet hakvaros, no? The Mishnah says there were only two. Now, the din of there being only two is halacha l'mishmishinai. Shnei kvarot, that's a gemara gemirila, it's not our determination. Omar Ula Amar Rabbi Yochanan. There's another issue that is related to this, as we'll see in the end, that if somebody was Ochal Chelev, Vifrish Korban, somebody accidentally, he ate a piece of Chelev thinking that it was Shuman, and there is a Chi of Kores on Achilas Chelev, so he puts a Korban aside and he says, this should be for my Chatas for Achilas Chelev, and then he goes ahead and he converts in the church, Emir Dato. So now it becomes a mummer. Then, maybe a year later, he does tshuva, and now he wants to bring the korban for his achilas chelev, the chazarbo. No, his korban is pasul. Because hoil v'nitcha yidache. Once you were unable to bring a korban, and it's nitcha mi'ala mizbeach, and the halacha is that we do not bring a korban from a mumer, which the Gemara learns out from the Pasuk, so then he's going to have to bring a new korban, because it no longer is roi for the korban. That's called dichui. Remember this halach of dichui. We've had in many different elements. And here, if you hold of dichui, which is a machlokas, but Rabbi Yochanan holds this is dichui, and because of that, you can never use this korban. Itmar nami om Rabbi Yirmi om Rabbi Abo om Rabbi Yochanan. In another way, there's a different dichui. If somebody ate chalev, set aside a korban, and then he went insane. Now, if you're insane, you cannot bring a korban, because it has to be l'ritzono. And since in insanity, we don't view a person as having an ability to express his ratzon, so then the korban was not able to be brought. Now, the guy becomes sane again. Chazar v'nishtapa, holo v'nitcha yidache. Same thing is true, says Rabbi Yochanan. This too is considered to be dichui, and he is not able to bring this korban. So why did Rabbi Yochanan need to say the same thing twice? I mean, he already told us that there's a din of dichui on the korban. What's the difference whether the dichui is because of a mumer, whether the dichui is because of insanity? No, it's absolutely different cases. I need both of them. Tzricha, because let's say Rabbi Yochanan told us the one about the mummer. So Yashmina Kambaita, I would say it's different when a person chooses dichui. So it's like he's pushing away that korban biyadayim, and he's saying, this is not a korban. I don't believe in God, or whatever it is that he's saying. Okay, so then that korban was actually rejected by him positively. Bashenkin, a person goes insane. He doesn't have anything to do with the carbon. It's just that we're not able to bring the carbon. So that is something that is just on its own. Hydromela kadachi. It became nitcha. There's a difference between dichoi and just nitcha, I would have thought. So maybe in that case, insanity would be similar to the person being asleep. Obviously, you can bring a korban even though a person is sleeping, because, I mean, otherwise, how could you bring a korban for someone who sends a korban from overseas? How do you know he's not asleep when you bring the korban? I mean, do we have to get confirmation in a telegram that this guy is now up, bring his korban? There's no such thing. So because of that, I would think, okay, so this is something that happened to him completely passively, in the same way that if a person is asleep, you bring a korban because he is incipiently conscious. The same thing is true of the nishtateh. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan to say it's not true, that a sleeper is not the same thing and is considered to be dichui. And let's say he would have told us that case, wouldn't it have been a kal v'chomer that if he was actively doicha, it would be possible? No. Why? Because insanity is ein biyado lachzor. I would say, since the person is insane, you can't even talk to him yet about becoming sane, so that's not considered to be something he could do right this minute. Aval hatam, in the case of the person who went ahead and became a kafir, at this instant he could do teshuva. So hatsim to be yodel lachzor, maybe it's never considered to be nitcha, because it's always in the hands of this individual to be able to bring this carbon at this moment by doing tshuva. Therefore, I need both cases. Omer of Yosef, I'll prove to you that this is considered to be dichui, the case where he became a mumer. Afanana mitnina. We have this same halacha in the Braita about the ira nidachat. So it says, what if there were kachim in the ira nidachat? Now, you're supposed to burn and destroy everything that's in the ira nidachat. But if it belongs to Hekdesh, what do you do with it? So kachim mizbeach. The kachim mizbeach, there's nothing that you can do over here. Because what are you going to do? You can't actually burn it, because it's not shlala, it's shlala shel Hekdesh, as the Gemara is about to explain. You can't bring it on the Mizbeach, because at this point, it's being owned by a kofer, the person who was Eved Avodah Zarah. Kotche bedek habayit, you can be paid at. Now, the question is, so we should just leave them to die. So if the kotche mizbeach, leave them to die. So we asked, as we'll see, amayamutu, why should they be allowed to just die once the people, kivan de ikto, havilu kapora, after Besdin kills the people in the Ir HaNidachas, isn't that a kapora for them? So now it should be kosher to be brought. Velisko legavoa. So why do we say we have to let them die? Obviously because once they were nitcha, and they're nitcha, that's a riot to Rabbi Yochanan. Lav mishum damrinan, hov nitchu idachu. So I have here 100% a riot to Rabbi Yochanan. Omale Abayas, Abayas said to Rabbi Yosef, it's not true. You think that a person who dies like this in an Ir HaNidachas gets a kapara just by the fact that he was killed? It's not true. Mate mitoch risho lo havilei kapara. A person who is killed while he's still a rasha, it's still nitcha, and he does not have a kapara just by the fact that he was killed. And I'll prove it to you. The Tanei Rav Shemaya, it says in a braita that a Kohen, a regular Kohen, is allowed to be Metame Lemate. How about if his parents were Perish Midarkei Tzibur? So Yochal Afilu Pirshu Avotav Midarkei Tzibur. What if his parents stopped keeping mitzvahs? Would you be allowed as a Kohen to go to the funeral? You might think Yitama. Tamud Lomar Lo Yitnefesh Lo Yitama Be'amav. You shouldn't, to someone who's be'amav ki'im l'sheiro. But if the sheiro are not osim asa amav, so in that case, the Kohen is not allowed to be, even for a parent or another relative, to be able to be at the funeral. So why is that? The person who is being buried has usually died before being buried. And if that's the case, then he should have gotten a kapora from his death. So you see from here that dying in a state of commitment to Avera, and a person didn't do teshuvah, so then he doesn't get a kapora just because he died. Omar Le'rova, come on. I mean, there's a big difference to someone who is neherag mitoch risho. Now you're talking about an Ir HaNidachas. An Ir HaNidachas, he was killed by the Besdin. Masha Enkein, someone who died, made mitoch risho, is very different. Because made mitoch risho, given the chiurche kamayit, lo avile kapara. Somebody simply dies a natural death, so that's not a kapara because it was just part of nature. He would have died no matter what. But if it was nerag mitoch risho, so over there, the whole point was that I could say that since he's being killed because of the fact that he had done this rishos, maybe that is a kapora, because it's coming specifically as a response to his rishos. So maybe the point over there was that in the case, what we said over here, about the riot to Rabbi Yochanan. So in the case when they were still alive as the Anshe Ir HaNidachas, we wouldn't have been able to use that korban. So then we do have a riot, because since even after they were killed and they would have gotten a kapara, we still cannot use these korbanos. That shows that Rabbi Yochanan is right. And Teda, I'll prove it to you. Dichtiv Mizmor La'asav Elohim. Bahu goyim benachalatecha, timu et echa kotshecha, notnu et nivlat avodecha, ma'achala of ha-shamayim, basar chasidecha l'chayet ha-oretz. How terrible it is that at the time that the goyim came into the Beis HaMikdash, they took the bodies of your avodim and fed them to the birds. They took the flesh of your chasidim and gave them to the beasts of the earth. Now, who are we talking about over here? My avadecha umay chasidecha. I mean, we're talking about chasidecha, meaning Chasidecha mamash. These were people who were true chasidim, meaning that they were always ne'emonim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to his mitzvahs. And the difference between the avadecha and the chasidecha is that the chasidim were actually on their own, they were chasidim. The avadecha we're talking about, all of those that were killed in the Beis HaMikdash at the Churban, and they were actually rishayim, but kivan de'ikto, now that the goyim have come in and killed them, now we're calling them avadecha. So we see that if a rasha is killed, so that's not a natural kind of misa, so then he does get a kapora. Omale Abaye, excuse me, that doesn't make sense. Mika damita ruge malchus ruge bezden. Hold on a minute over here. That pusik is referring to people who were basically martyred, right? I mean, they were killed by the goyim that had come in to kill Jews. Okay, but in the case of the Ir HaNidachat, it's the bezden that is killing the person for the avera. Fascinatingly. It's an amazing nekuda. You would have thought, I think intuitively, that if the person is being killed for the avera, there's a greater likelihood of his getting kapora from that death, because the death is coming in response to the avera. But actually, the Braita says just the opposite, as we're going to see. But he's going to bring a raya to this far. That haruge malchus kivan shelo bedin kamagdale havilu kapora. Since this is not justice, so if it's not justice, what is it? It's completely unreal, unnatural, goes against what would have happened biologically, and goes against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants as the proper hanhaga for the world. That is so patently unfair that it serves as a kapora. Masha Inkein, if someone is killed in Besdin, that is absolute justice. Why should there be a kapora? This is even Stevens. Now we're even. Okay, so now you still have all of your averas, though. So therefore, kiven de bedin komiktele, lo havilu kapora? Why should there be a kapora just because you were killed for that avera? You're still considered to be the same Rasha, and I'll prove it to you. And here's why we brought up this whole sugya. Because take a look at the Mishnah, where the Mishnah said, lo ayu kovrino to bekivrot avotav. They did not bury someone killed in Besdin in the family plot. Now, if you're going to tell me that the very fact that he was killed in Besdin is a kapora, so why would we not bury him? We said that the reason that we're not able to bury him is because we brought a raya from the story of the Atzmaus Elisha, that we never bury a rasha next to a tzaddik. But if you're telling me this person already had kapora because he was killed in Besdin, so now he's not a rasha. So why are we treating him as a rasha? So we should therefore bury him back in the family plot. Do you see that I'm right? So you think that Mineube, if he was killed, so then he definitely gets a kapora. So then Likavru, why don't we bury them back in the family plot? Because they're no longer Rishayim. That doesn't bother me, says the Gemara, because the point over here is that if he was Nikba, after being killed in Besdin, yes, so then it would be true that he does get a kapar, maybe. And if he was never buried, so then we lack that additional kapar that we spoke about yesterday. The very fact that you take this person who's at the top of his game in the morning and getting all of this covered and being kowtowed to and then thrown into a hole by the end of the day, that is a terrible thing, and that maybe actually restores his primal innocence in terms of kapora. But just dying, maybe not. So it could be that when it said in the Braita that we have to be doicha those karbonas, it means that since they were nidcha, So now, even afterwards, they would actually not be able to be used, because you need both. Motzi Rivada Bar Ava. Take a look again at our Mishnah. It's not true. It says over here that the family are not mitablim. So there's not supposed to be any avelut for someone who killed an abestin. But, I mean, internally, of course, they can be einanim. She'in aninut ela b'lev. We're not telling you how to feel inside. If the person whose relative was killed in Bezdin feels aninut, that's fine. Now, Isal Kadaitach, Kivan de Ikbar, Havilu Kapor, if you're telling me that the moment that we've threw that relative into that hole in the ground, he does have a kapora, why can you not be mitabel? So then liablu? Well, it's not just being thrown into that hole. In order to get a kapora, you need to have misa, kvura, and be'ina nami ikul basar. You need, to some extent, decay of the body. And that decay, that is a complete and total bizayin for the person. And if you take a look in the Mishnah, it seems quite clear. Deikunami, because the Mishnah says only after nitakela basar, after the body is decomposed. So then it says melaktimat atzamot vekovrinot mimekomat. So then they would gather the remains, which are now after ikul basar. And then they bury them back in the plot of the family. Now, Shema Amino, you see from here that we only talk about kapora after the, not only the death, not only after the burial, but because the person is considered to have had a kapora after his body decomposes. Ravashi Omar. Ravashi says, look, there's a very simple explanation of why the avelut would not be mutter. Because the avelut mi'ematai kamitchalat. When would the avelus begin? Remember, the halacha of the beginning of the avelut is the moment that stimata golel, the moment that the body is covered in the grave. But the kapora, even if you don't hold, you're trying to bring a raya that we need nitakel basar, it could be that the kapora comes before that, but kapora mi'ematai kahavya mi'chichosu tsara de kivra purta. It's only when there's a little bit of the beginning of the tsar to see that body decomposing. It doesn't have to be necessarily completely decomposed. It could be that there's a tsar of a neshama to see the meaninglessness of his body as it begins to decompose and has no chiyas. So that should be enough, perhaps. Yilkacho v'idchu yidachu. Maybe this din of dichui that we've been talking about would apply to the avelut per se. And since the avelut, at the beginning of the avelut, was not allowed to be put onto the person, because it would be expressing avelut for a rasha, so once it was pushed away, so yidachu, which is part of the dinim of dichui in general. But wait a minute, Ravashi. If the kapara would come before ikul basar, why did our Mishnah say that we will not put the body back into the family plot until nitakel basar, yachi lamali nikul basar? That could just be Mishum de lo efsha. There's no way to move a decomposing body. So the Mishnah is saying that after it's possible to reinter the body, so then we'll reinter, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't view him as already a mischaper way before that. Okay, now the question is, the din of a kever itself. Now it happened that when Rav was buried, this is an interesting thing because there are tshuvas, very recent tshuvas, a few hundred years ago, of plagues that had come to various cities. And the minhag was that they would take some of the earth from a kever of a tzaddik, and they would put it into a pocket to carry around with them, and this would cure the plague. So apparently this belief had very ancient antecedents, because they used to take avishakli mine afra liyishata bat yuma. At that time, the Gemara talks about in Shabbos, ashita bat yuma, there was 24-hour flu, which caused very high fever. So it was the one-day ashita, one-day fever. So they were taking the earth from the place where Rav had been buried. So they came to ask Shmuel, is such a thing mutter? Because normally the halacha is that anything that it belongs to a mace is osur b'hana'ah. Amar lo hu yotav, did nothing wrong with that. After all, dirt can't become osur. Karka olam hu, the karka olam eina ne'aseret, and I'll prove it to you. Dichtiv vayashlechet afarel kever b'nei ha'am. After they burned the Asherah, so it says over there that Yoshio, who was on a campaign to wipe out Avodah Zarah, so he took the famous Asherah tree that everybody had been worshiping, it was there in the Beis HaMikdash, he burnt it, and he took the ashes and scattered them over the graves of the people who had been the Avodah Asherah, as an appropriate response. Here's your beautiful God, enjoy its ashes that join you in hell. So makish kever b'nei ha'am v'avodat kochavim. So what is the point of the pasuk saying that it's all interrelated? It's a hekesh. Just like avodat kochavim is never usher while it's part of the attachment to the ground itself also doesn't become usher. How do I know that? Dechtiv, Asheratem Yoshimotam et Elohehem al Harim Aramim. So it says, Abet Abdun, you have to completely destroy all of the places that you are. Yoshimotam, that you're going to be Morish, you're going to make poor, Zaloshanav, right? You're destroying. So you have to completely wipe them out. All of the places where you're destroying the people who used to live here. And you have to wipe out their gods that are on the mountains and on the hills. And what does that mean? It's coming to tell me that only Al Harim Elohim, if they have a building on a mountain, fine, then you can destroy that because it becomes usher. But not if the Harim are Elohim. So if people are worshiping Mount Fuji, that doesn't turn Fuji into a Avodah Zarah. So there's no way to take something which is Mechuber LeKarka and to actually make it awesome. So Hakanami, the same thing should be true over here, it said Shmuel. People taking dirt from the ground, Karka Elam, is never awesome. The Mechuber LeMitzah. And therefore, if they wanted to deal with their illness by using dirt, and they believe that that's going to save them, there's nothing wrong with that. Yes, the Gemara, Hachut save kever la'aviv. Here we have halacha. Somebody dug a kever for his father who died, and in the end, they didn't use that kever. And the family protests, they want to bury him somewhere else, whatever the reason was. He went and he buried his father elsewhere. Areza lo yikaver bo olamit. He cannot himself use that grave for himself ever. So that means that once it was miyuchad for a mace, it would be usher. And you said the dirt can't become usher. So how in the world is this usher? We're talking about over here, not a grave in the ground. We're talking about a mausoleum, this beautiful building that he built in honor of his father. That cannot be, that is something that can be us. Or just like we said before, the Elohim, Al Hari. So if there's a binyan, that binyan can be us. Okay. And I want to point out, we have reestablished the ascendancy of males today as Tsuri takes the headlight away from Ori. Uh-huh. This is a serious challenge. It may require some additional boosts. Tashma. All right, I have a question against Shmuel. Kever chadash mutar bahana'ah. So you're allowed to use a grave that was never used, but the moment, even if you put a nafel, even if you put a stillborn into that grave, it now becomes osur bahana'ah, a grave. But a grave is dirt, and Shmuel, you said that dirt never becomes osur. So how come this is osur? Well, I told you, the previous case is talking about not dirt, it's talking about a binyan. That's what we're talking about over here. Ochanami bekever binyan. Well, what about this braita? Nimtza ta'omer shalosh kvaroten. Bottom line is, there would be three different dinim of discovering a kever. So, if you literally discovered it, that's called a kever hanimtza. You never even realized it was in your land. You knew for a fact that you never gave permission for it to be a place of kfarim, and you know that it was bought as a piece of property without any kfarim on it. That's called a kever hanimtza. Then we have a kever hayadua, where in that case, we know that it was actually legally a kever. And then we have a kever that we know is a kever and is currently being mazik et harabim. People actually are having a big problem because it's in the middle of a road, and that is making people that walk by there be metame their truma. They didn't realize that there was a kever there, and so on. So a kever hanimtza, that means that the mate was buried there without anybody's permission. Well, that is not a kever. And a kever hanimtza, you're allowed to move the body to somewhere else, because what right was there to make that kever in my field? Kever that is a, once he does, now here's what's, once he does, he takes out the body, moves it to a different place. So now that place, first of all, is considered to be completely tahar once we take out the body. So there is normally a gezera that a place that had been used for burial remains tome. But that's a takona derabanan in order that people should not illegally disinter people. But in this case, that's the din. You're supposed to move the body for reinterment. And therefore, in this case, they didn't make that gezera. The place is tahar. And now it's mutar bahana'ah. You can actually use this place for whatever it is you want to asur it. Because even if it would have been asur, they didn't have permission to put it there. So how did it become asur? But what about where there was permission that had been granted? It was a kever hayadua. That you are not allowed to move. And if you do, pinohu, it remains tame midrabanan. And look at this. Asur bahana'ah. Now here it says you're not allowed to use the burial place. I mean, that is clearly not like Shmuel, right? I mean, Shmuel said you can never asur karka oilam bahana'ah at all. So we seem to have a raya over here against Shmuel. No, says Shmuel, again, you're prejudiced. You think about a kever because you think about a kever as a hole in the ground made out of dirt. We're talking about a kever as a beautiful building, which, as we know, today this has become rather standard. People are buried in buildings instead of in the ground. And that's considered to be a perfectly valid burial. And that's what it's talking about over here. By the way, you said that if you find a kever, then you're allowed to move it and reinter the body. But how can you do that? Maybe this was a kever of a mate mitzvah. The din is that a mate mitzvah is konem mikomo, And how do you know that this kever did not appear in your field because someone found a body on the ground and was mekayem the mitzvah of kvura, and in doing so, the mate was kena that mokum, and no one is ever allowed to move him. So I don't understand, how could you jump to a conclusion that it's an illegal kever? No. Shani mate mitzvah, the kalait. It's not true. If this would have been the kever of a mate mitzvah, I would have heard about it. That makes like a tremendous impact on people, that someone came along, found a mate, buried it here. I mean, it's something that people discuss, and I, as the owner of the Sutta, would certainly have heard about it. Okay. Once we've brought up the question about whether the actual kever becomes usser, let's talk about other things that are made specifically for a mate. So let's say someone dies and someone else is being ereg beged lemate in order for there to be the proper begonim for the mate. Somebody makes these tachrichim and they hadn't yet been put on the mate. Abaya omar asur, even if they were never used, you can't use them for anything else, because anything that is made for tzarach hamate is considered to be osur the same way that the mate is osur. Okay, Rava says, no, that's not true. It's only osur once it's used. Now, this is a very important machlokas that we've had in a lot of areas in Shas. It is called hazmana. And the question over here is, when something is not actually used for a purpose, is the very fact that it was set aside for that use, does it define it as that? Or is there no such thing as defining a place? You're building a home. You define a particular room as a bathroom. It's never, ever been used as a bathroom. Can you daven in that room? Or is it a bathroom? Well, I mean, that's a question. Is hazmana miltahi, or is it not? So Abaya, who says that it's usur because it was made for the maid, he obviously holds that hazmana miltahi. Gavi can write this down again, just in case it wasn't written down in one of the many other occurrences. So hazmana, then of course, in brackets, lav, end bracket, milti. So that's the machlokes. Rav amar mutar, because he holds hazmana, lav miltahi. My time at Abaye. So where does Abaye get the idea that just setting something aside for use is enough to make it usur? Ah, he says, listen, we basically have a gezera shava, because we have the idea of the mate that we learn from Vatamot Shom Miriam, Vatikaver Shom. So in that pasuk, it uses the word Shom twice, and we find that word Shom to be talking about the Egla Rufa, because it says, Oridu Ziknea Yirahi, Eta Egla Nachaletan, Asher Lo Yavedbo Volo Yizorea, the Orfu Shom. So we learn from there that this idea of the comparison in the Torah of Egla Arufa to the mace is teaching us that just like an Egla Arufa becomes usur by the very fact that you called it an Egla Arufa, because we learn out that the Egla Arufa becomes usur the moment that it's brought to the place Yiridata Lenachaletan Osarta. The moment you bring it to the place where you're going to do the Arifa, that's enough to usur. So that teaches us, just like the Egla Arufa, the very fact that I call it an Egla Arufa before I even did the Arifa, that is enough to usur it. Dinah Abaya, the same thing is true of a mate. Ochanami bazmana mitzra. So inyonim that are given for mate are also asr. Whereas Rava says, oh yes, absolutely, there's a gzera shava of shom shom. But I'm learning it not from the idea of the Egla Rufa. I'm learning Miriam, Vatamot Shum Miriam, from a different Shum. Abet Abdunet Kolam Nikamot Asher Avdu Shum Hagoyim. And the deal is that when it comes to Avodas Kochavim, we learn out in Mesechet Avodah Zarah that there is no us Isser on places that were set aside for Avodah Zarah. So therefore, Ma Avodas Kochavim Bahazmona Lo Mitzra, just by making it a designated church, that doesn't answer it. It has to actually be used. So you're going to say, Shor Zel Avodas Kochavim. That doesn't make it Takruvas Avodas Kochavim. So Afa Konami, on the contrary, I say that this teaches us that the din of the mace in Vatomot Sham Miriam is not going to be Usr. Mitzra is not Mitzra, Basmana Lo Mitzra. So, okay, I mean, I understand. Why did Rava choose to learn it from Avodah Zarah instead of saying that we should learn it from Egla Rufa? Because Rava says, listen, you have a choice of learning it from one or the other. Isn't it more reasonable from learning Mishamshim from Mishamshim as opposed to Egla Rufa, where that is the thing itself? In other words, if we're trying to learn a Mishamshe Avodah Zarah to Mishamshe HaMate, so Tachrichin for a mate, they're not the thing itself that is Usser. They're not the mate. They're being used for the mate. So to the Binyan, the church, that's not the Avodah Zarah. It's just something that was made in order to be an accessory for an Avodah Zarah. But if you're talking about an Egla Rufa, well, of course an Egla Rufa is different. The Egla Rufa is the actual object which is causing all of the problems, and it itself, he gufa, is the thing which has been set aside as kedusha. Okay, that's a good point. So Abaye, why doesn't Abaye learn out shum shum from Avodas Kochavim like Rava does? Malacha, Abaye says, look, makes far more sense to me to learn something that is mide di urche, mide di urche gamrina. There are things that are properly part of a normal existence. So doing things for a mace and so on, that's part of normal existence. And to say that we have a mitzvah of Egla Rufa, that's part of normal existence. But to go and to be Oved Avodas Kochavim, to speak about learning out the dinim of something from an insane world of Avodas Kochavim, that's not normal at all. And therefore, it's not something that the Torah would have compared to each other. It makes much more sense that we're talking about the comparison that I'm making. And that is that we should say Hazmona is a Milta. So if you set aside something for Avodah Zarah, okay, over there I understand. You're going to say, I'm setting this aside as a landing space for aliens. Okay, very funny. So the same thing is true. You say, I'm setting aside this building for a church. You're not insane, are you? I mean, only insane people would make a church. So that's the point. But it's not considered to be something that would, Hazmona would be a milta. Maybe that's good for the point. It's abnormal. Excellent. All right, gentlemen, that brings us to an end of another five daf in Masechet Sanhedrin for today. Woo! All righty. I think we still have a few moments left to do start the next perek in Mikvahs. So let me turn off this recording. Hold on one moment, please. Thanks. Wow. Gosh.